I mean, it's a very flattering question, and I feel like a lot has to do with, I think, the goodwill that I've amassed for my father. I would attribute it to all the goodwill that my father created. It was a legacy given to me that I inherited, and I hopefully have made him very, very proud. Was timing a factor in your success? I think it wasn't timing that was a factor in my success. It was more destiny. I really believe that I was destined to be an AD on Dilwale Dulhaniya Le Jayenge, destined to work with Shah Rukh Khan, destined for him to offer me himself in my first directorial venture on the top of a mountain in Switzerland. It's all destiny. I believe that I give destiny much more credit than timing ever. One can say you have Midas touch, but where do you think you acquire determination to succeed? I was born ambitious. I always wanted to achieve, be the top of my class, be the top, barring in sports, because I always came last there because I was not entirely a sporty person. But winning the gold for debates, drama, elocution, all that was very important. So ambition levels were always very, very high. And a fire in my belly to succeed was always there. It still exists. I'm happy to report. Do you have a confidant when you discuss and take... I take advice from Aditya Chopra, my best friend, on all business and personal, and of course to Shah Rukh, who I consider an elder brother figure in my life. My current muse? I don't have a muse, but I have a daughter, Alia Bhatt. What are some of your biggest learnings as a filmmaker? A job as a filmmaker is 90% people handling, 10% talent and creativity. So basically dealing with people's egos, delusions, mindsets and moods is predominantly what my job as a filmmaker is. 10% you can put your creativity at its best usage. What mindset are you in when you sit down to write? I never sit down and write. I actually think and then make someone else type. Yes, this does sound strange, but I never sit down and actually write my thoughts. And mindset, I think, under the water and in my shower, I always think I think the best. How does an idea for a film come together? I think it's an amalgamation of many observations that you make at a certain period of time. And from there, a germ is born within you. Observations could be things you watch or people you observe. Are there movies that you oriented yourself on? I think Edil & Mushkil is a very personal film for me. It's about a beat of a one-sided love story that was a big part of my life. And I was able to actually translate that inner emotion on celluloid. So that film for me will always be a very personal film for me because it has a piece of my broken heart in it. What's the mark of a good story for you? A story that actually has a strong beginning, middle and end is a great story for me. Your film seems to look at the world through rose-tinted glasses. Why is that? I lived in a very moderate, tiny house when I was growing up. And I always imagined when I saw those movies that were larger than life that I would one day actually be able to captivate that larger than life feeling in my cinema. I love beauty. I love glamour. I love grandeur. And I like the glory of all that comes with movie making. And I hope that my cinema has reflected that because I've enjoyed it at every beat. For me, cinema is a larger than life medium, and capturing the essence of that larger than life is what I've always aspired for. So though my glasses are rose tinted, but my reality check is always around me, which is my mother. Do you see influence in the work of other filmmakers? Well, I believe that, you know, I'm glad that you can do enough work where you become a kind of school of thought of filmmaking. And I think whenever there is a typical Bollywood song with dancers, glamour, glory and glitz, it's said, oh, this is like a Karan Johar type of song, which I'm happy and I take as a compliment. How does your own work influence you as a director? That question I won't answer, doesn't make sense. What drives you to constantly push the limits of innovation in film? I think it's important to be relevant, to be with the times, to constantly reinvent your mindset according to the atmosphere around you. So if VFX is of a certain nature around you, then you have to make sure that you implement the tonality, syntax and quality of your VFX in your cinema. Be it sound, be it other technical departments, you have to be with your time. So innovation comes from actually acknowledgement of the atmosphere that exists technically around you. Do you think the director is a high priest of any film? I think the director is just, I would say, like the therapist on set more than anything else. He has to listen to everybody's moods and anxieties and stresses and basically maneuver his or her way through that situation. He's definitely no high priest. He's more the therapist on set. What interests you in pan-India filmmaking? I think that we call ourselves Bollywood, Tollywood, Collywood. All that is wrong. We're Indian cinema at first. And pan-India was waiting to happen. The first crossover that actually happened was when Telugu cinema worked so beautifully in the Hindi belts. That was the crossover that I think was most successful. Not the crossover to the West, but a crossover internally, where the North, South, West and East can amalgamate and be proudly called Indian cinema, and we can drop the Bollywood tag for life. From a storytelling perspective, what is the advancement in technology resulted in better movies? Yes, absolutely. Today, technology has enhanced the big event films, the spectacle films, and we are able to tell stories, be it in the mythology world or in the high event world. But many, many, many stories and narratives have been made able to be possible because of the strong influence of VFX and computer graphics. Are we missing something, an extra layer of aesthetics, if we don't see a film in its technological iteration? I won't answer that either. I've answered it. How do you handle the dynamics of working with multiple star leads in the movies? I think managing people and egos is now, I would say, something that I could give a masterclass in. People management is a skill set that very few have, and I'm glad that I acquired it thanks to my parenting. What is the one change that you would like to see in the film industry? I would like the film industry to actually stop being a part of the herd mentality. We have a terrifying problem. We're always following the herd. That's one. I believe that we should be original, have the conviction to tell our stories without emulating or kind of trying to copy someone else. Second is punctuality. I believe we are not a punctual industry, and I believe we have to kind of give value to time, ours and everybody else's. Are there any genres that you don't like as an audience? I don't like horror films, though I've attempted making 2 horror films and both have been horrible experiences. Moving on from films, what makes a good TV show for you? A TV show is one that engages you season after season, somewhere the characters are so compelling and the subtracks and the sidetracks equally engaging, where you can keep going on and on and on watching it season after season because you're so engaged with the characters. You've been endorsing a plethora of brands, either via IG collaboration or commercial. How do you decide which product you want to be face of? I think that the products that actually go with my personality, my lifestyle, and my general ethos as a human being, those are the products that I endorse. Some just don't go with my personality or what I stand for as a human being. Those products I stay clear of. What fuels your decision-making these days? The only thing that has ever fueled my decision-making is my instinct. I think we don't value instinct as much as we should. Instinct is everything. It's gold, and we have to tap into our individual instincts to actually achieve our goals. At 50, what's your definition of love? Love could be very many things to many people. Love is a tough 4-letter word to describe. Love is a feeling that you can't express. But love is also sometimes like a slap on your face when it happens to you. So when you feel that stinging slap on your face, and I say this symbolically, you know somewhere there's love. Also, love is a feeling that enters when there's a third person involved, where you feel that you could lose out on that to another person. And that's when the feeling of love truly penetrates. As I said, love is something that you can't describe. It's a feeling. It's a feeling that makes you lose sleep, makes you skip a beat, makes you want to kind of stare at your phone to find out if the person is online, or stalk them on Instagram sometimes. I mean, it makes you do the strangest things. Your book, The Unsuitable Boy, earned rave reviews. Any plans? Well, no. I think I've written that was a memoir when I was 44. Maybe 20 years later, I'll write part 2 to Unsuitable Boy. I'm sure many things will have unraveled at that time. With Yash and Rui growing up, your parental instincts would be altering accordingly. What is the equation you share with them? I have a very amazing, friendly, yet respectful, yet reverential respect relationship with my children. It's the way I was raised, where I was very friendly with my mother and very, 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 I used to sit down and she was like my best friend. But also there was a huge boundary of love, respect and reverence. And I want to have that same relationship with Yash and Ruhi. What are you working on next? Well, I'm working on an action film next, which I wouldn't want to disclose anymore. But yes, me making an action film is like literally the most unthinkable thing. But I'm planning to go out of my comfort zone and probably, hopefully, create a world that I've never, ever created before. How do you unwind after a long day of work? I watch. I Netflix, and maybe not chill, but just Netflix and Hotstar and Amazon and all the channels. I watch a lot of digital content in my bed very happily. That's my relaxing time. Fashion questions. According to you, who would be any person, who should be any person's wardrobe's MVPs?
Most valuable possessions.
The most valuable possessions any person's wardrobe should be their athleisure, because that's what really is what's happening today, and athleisure is here to stay. What are your favorite timeless wardrobe staples? Well, I think I don't hold on to products, but shine, sequence, bling are my things. So everything sequency is a staple in my wardrobe. So some fashion pieces are really worth the overspend. As I said, I love jackets. I like all kinds of jackets. Like, I'm a big jacket freak. So any kind of jacket, oversized, with things on it, not simple. I can't bear plain, simple things. They bore me to tears. Describe your closet to us. It's like a bedroom full of all kinds of colorful clothes. That's what it is. It's a 1 BHK with every kind of color that you can find on planet Earth. It's in my wardrobe. Are you a closet editor or a closet builder? I didn't understand that. Okay. Most celebrities would like to buy your wardrobe out. But if you could buy out someone's wardrobe, who would it be? I would like to walk into Mr. Bachchan's wardrobe. I think he'll have such amazing fashion down from the 70s to today. I'd just like to be a secret voyeur to that wardrobe.